are on the line. Live on Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga, and in Auburn on ESPN 106.7, or online on FoxSports983.com and ESPNAU.com. You are on the line with Noah Gardner and Lance Daw. Join the show by calling in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
You're on the line with Noah Gardner and Lance Daw on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Happy Monday, everybody. We have a full slate of bowl games that we can pick from. We get to talk about this previous weekend's conference championship action. We know how the college football playoff will shake out. Also, it is still basketball season, and that is where you can find some happy things instead of a Birmingham Bowl bid.
Yeah, anytime I think about football, I'm dead inside. But now, basketball, hey, Auburn is moving up in the AP poll. They're 7-1. Things are going great.
They're too low in the AP poll.
I agree. 100%.
But there are some undefeated teams in front of them, and we'll talk about that later on in the show as well. We've got a fun, packed-out show for you. Number to call, 334-321-1390. Anything that you want to talk about, it's fair game here on this Monday. We'll also have Jeremy Law of Radio Alabama Sports with us here on the Monday edition of the show to talk to us about that SEC championship game. And we'll start off the show today with the SEC championship game. Alabama clobbers Georgia in the title game, 41-24. And effectively, at that moment, you knew when Alabama went up 14, 17 points, whatever it was, 21, who knows, it was three scores. At that point, we were all thinking, man, this is 2017 all over again. They're back. Two SEC teams in the college football playoff. It's Alabama and Georgia. What does this tell us about each team as we head into the postseason? Alabama's dominant 17-point victory over Georgia that made us kind of wonder if Georgia should even be in the playoff.
Well, I'll say the first impression that I had, and I think some of y'all would agree with this, is this Georgia defense apparently is not as good, as invincible as we might have thought it was. Alabama was able to kind of pick Georgia apart. They really hit some long plays. I believe both of the long touchdowns were to Jameson Williams. One was just an absolute like 55-yard bomb from Bryce Young, and the other one was some type of post where Jameson Williams just outran everybody on his way to the end zone. It was just so odd to see Georgia give up so many different explosive plays and Alabama just kind of do what they want. This Alabama offensive line was able to hold up against this Georgia front, which really, really surprised me. I thought that would be a really big storyline in this game if Georgia were to have won. I thought they would have been able to dominate a little bit more in the trenches, and Alabama just kind of handled business after falling apart against Auburn in the Iron Bowl just last week. So I'm just bewildered at the way that this Georgia defense was not able to hold their own after seeing them dominate time and time again this season. But it was something that Sting and I were talking about before we went on air. It's like, what offense have they played that would have legitimately given them like a run for their money, right?
Definitely both of these teams' strength of schedules aren't great.
Yeah.
The SEC ended up being down this year, which you can expect because there was a massive exodus of talent from the league a year ago. Just not many people gave the SEC a whole lot of thought that it could be potentially down this year. I think the SEC East was one of the worst divisions in all of Power 5 football this year. Of course, there's still SEC talent there, but in terms of the way that those teams played and the results, I think Georgia had a really, really easy schedule this year. But talking about the trenches, talking about Alabama's offensive line play, because that was where I thought Alabama had no chance. I was thinking to myself, how is Alabama going to run the football and take some of the pressure off of Bryce Young? Which, granted, among our discussions, I did say to you guys last week, we don't know a whole lot about this Georgia secondary because they truly haven't been tested by a good or great quarterback in Bryce Young's instance. We don't know how that Georgia secondary is going to play against a quarterback like that, against a receiving core like that. We know they're talented, but they were young coming into this season, and I think they got exposed a little bit by Bryce Young when you look at the stat line and the way that the game developed. But I'm most shocked about how Alabama's offensive line performed to be able to run the ball effectively, to be able to protect Bryce Young against a defense that has been stifling all year long and has been one of the better pass rushes in the SEC from a sacks perspective. They may not get a ton of, you know, negative plays and stopping the run, but I think that's more by virtue of the scheme, the fact that they're in the 3-4 and they're not looking for a whole lot of penetration up front. They let the linebackers do their work. But I was so shocked at how Alabama really controlled the game on both sides of the football in the trenches, which was an area that I don't think any of us were expecting Alabama to win in this game, which is why many people were predicting Georgia to win. But I'll tell y'all, when I predicted Georgia to win on Friday, and I think all of us were thinking this, there's no way you felt great about picking Georgia to win this ball game going into Saturday, just because we know the history with Alabama. We know what Nick Saban brings to the table. We knew that this could very well end up going the exact way that it did.
No sacks for this Georgia front. None whatsoever.
It's wild.
Absolutely incredible the way that this Alabama offensive line was able to hold up after it has been the storyline, I feel like, this season. I know there have been different weak points on this Alabama team so far this year, and it's clear that this is up until this SEC championship game, it looked like this was one of the worst teams that Saban's fielded in quite some time, and a lot of it had to do with the struggles on the offensive line, and in this game specifically, just absolutely manhandled Georgia, didn't allow a lot of pressure. Bryce Young was able to essentially do whatever he wanted. It's a shame that John Metchie is hurt, because I would love to see this team continue to play healthy and to play well in the playoff, because I think it's going to make these final two semifinal games and then potentially the championship really entertaining.
Another thing that I think we learned about these two teams is that's how we've opened our show today. What did this game tell us about each team as we head into the postseason? I'm going to center here on Alabama. I think this game shows us that they're still getting better. They're still adapting. This is like artificial intelligence, Skynet's about to take over the world kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like this team learned and adapted from the information that they even received a short week ago when they were playing in the Iron Bowl at Auburn. And granted, a lot of people will say, are we sure they've really taken a step forward? Was this a one-off performance? Because it's easy to lean on the results that they had in the first 12 games of the season, and that was such a mixed bag and so much inconsistency up front, really just inconsistency across the board for Alabama. But I think that they adapted in this game against Georgia. They did things to take some of the heat off of Bryce Young, take some of the heat off of this offensive line, to not allow Georgia to be able to get after them. A lot of screens. They worked the running backs into the passing game. They made it easier on everybody, and they utilized some of the things that they learned, I believe, in the second half of the Iron Bowl, where Alabama started having, you know, from a yardage standpoint, Alabama had a lot more success in the second half of the Iron Bowl than they did in the first half. I know they still only scored 10 points, but they did a lot more in terms of yardage in the second half than they did in the first half, and I think they leaned on a lot of what they did in the halftime adjustments of the Iron Bowl, and they applied some of that during a week of preparation against Georgia, and they ratcheted it up a little bit, and that's how they were able to go and put up 41 on one of the nation's best defenses, which, granted, I still think Georgia is as advertised. I still think they are a great football team. I think they deserve to be in the playoff. I think they are one of the four best teams in the country. I know, Sting, you're shaking your head. Resume-wise, Georgia does not have one of the four best resumes in college football. They don't. But from an eye test perspective, I'm still willing to say that Georgia is a top four team in the country. And if Georgia and Baylor met on the same field, Georgia would be the team that I was picking, and I wouldn't have to really think too hard about it. I think this is a really good Georgia football team. But we've asked ourselves this coming into this season, and the narrative about this football season, when everybody was talking about, well, this could be the year for Georgia to win the national championship. I asked this question. I said, is this offense coming into 2021, or are we still living in the 2000s? Is this offense still going to be lethargic when they play teams that are as talented as them? And we got our answer.
You don't think that this Georgia offense has evolved at all?
I think it's improved from offenses that we've seen in the past that were led by, you know, Eason and Fromm and whatnot. But I still think this Georgia offense is lacking a true superstar at the quarterback position. I think this offense, I mean, they did throw for 340 yards, but they also had 48 pass attempts and two interceptions thrown. Stetson Bennett ain't it. And if Stetson Bennett's playing over JT Daniels, the JT Daniels ain't it either, right?
Yeah.
So it comes back to the quarterback position for me in this passing game and why, for what reason, this passing game can't get this offense over the hump. They have to rely too much on their running game to be able to succeed. And when they do that, they had 3.6 yards per rush, right? I mean, they did not set the tone up front. And at the end of the day, I think the way that you beat Georgia is force them to have to throw the ball to beat you. And if you've got the athletes like Alabama and some of these other teams that they're going to play in the playoff, I think Georgia could have a really hard time beating any one of these teams in this college football playoff, especially Michigan, which is who they are playing, because that defense is good enough to run with them for four quarters, I think.
You're talking about forcing this Georgia team to throw. Stetson Bennett, 29 of 48. He had to throw 48 pass attempts in this game. That is by far his season high. Might easily be a career high. The next closest, 29 attempts against Tennessee earlier this year. Also, something else I want to point out. You were talking about the pass defense for Georgia earlier, and you were saying that you didn't think that they had necessarily been tested. They've only played one team that is inside the top 40 in passing yards per game nationally. One team.
That's Alabama.
It was Florida up until the Alabama game. I mean, Alabama 7th. Up until the Alabama game, they had faced Florida, and that was the only team in the top 40 in passing yards per game.
How is Florida top 40?
I have absolutely no idea. They're averaging 261 passing yards per game.
Huh.
Maybe a lot of it had to do with what happened against Samford. Not sure.
That is wild.
Does not make sense to me.
No, it doesn't, because that has been a revolving door at quarterback for the Gators. So, you know, this is such a hard game to glean a ton of things off of, because we're asking ourselves, was this just a one-off thing? Is Georgia really as good as what we thought? Like, I don't want to overreact to it. I think Georgia's still a really good football team, but I definitely think it took 13 games for them to finally get exposed. This was the 13th game of the season. It took 13 games for them to finally play a team that could expose weaknesses. And now it's on film. Now it's there.
Yep.
It's out in the open. The skeleton is out of the closet. Like, it is there for everyone to see. And Michigan has the dudes on defense to give them a lot of issues. I mean, Michigan, granted, Iowa's horrible, but Michigan went out there and put on maybe the most impressive conference championship performance of the weekend, beating Iowa 42-3, left no doubt. So I'm looking forward to that game a lot. I think that's the most enticing bowl game of our season until you get to the national championship, which we don't know what matchup that is yet. But of everything that we've got set right now, all 42 bowl games that we've got, that is the most enticing matchup of the bowl season in my mind, is Georgia-Michigan. And we'll get to that later on in the show. But I'm not ready to write off Georgia or anything like that, but their weaknesses were definitely telegraphed on film.
Absolutely. So I think the question is, obviously you're saying that you have to make this Georgia team throw the ball. Can Michigan make Georgia throw the ball? Are they capable of doing so? Are they capable of competing with them in the trenches? And I think after we saw what Ohio State did against Michigan, I think absolutely. And Ohio State likes to throw the football.
And granted, yeah, 100%. And they really limited Ohio State's efficiency at doing that. They were the top passing offense in college football coming into that game. I've been saying all season that the way to beat Georgia is you have to make them throw the football. Just nobody could get to that point, because Georgia was able to go into all 12 of their regular season games, and except for the Clemson game, but you know, at the end of the day, a defensive score was the decider there.
Mm-hmm.
Georgia was able to go in every single one of their games this year, for the most part, and establish the game on the ground and win it in the trenches up front, and win it early. Like, Georgia was able to strong arm you early on in the trenches, and they were able to run the ball effectively enough to where it took the pressure off of Stetson Bennett. Like, they were able to get a 10-point, 14-point lead on somebody. It was a ball game. You were not going to overcome. Many teams couldn't even score 14 points on Georgia when you look at how many points they were giving up. So what confidence would somebody have that someone could overcome a 14-point deficit against Georgia while also being able to keep them off the scoreboard, because they still have a good offense, right? I just don't think that this offense belongs amongst the nation's elite. I don't think that this offense, from an efficiency standpoint, without that passing game, I don't think it belongs among the nation's best. They just didn't play anybody this year from a defensive standpoint that put them into a position where they had to throw the football in order to win a game, and Alabama did that because Alabama was able to score. They were able to play the game at their pace because Bryce Young went off and had a ton of passing yards and was able to speed up the game because they had quick drives and they were able to get points off of it. And then that defense at Alabama is still good. I don't think that they had a great performance on Saturday from a yardage standpoint. I mean, once again, you still break it down. Georgia had 30 first downs and 449 total yards. Part of that may be because of the amount of drives that Georgia had, how often Alabama was able to score. Georgia did win the time of possession, 34 to 26, excuse me. So, like, I think when you break it down, like, part of Alabama's game there possibly hurt their defense, but I think when you break it down by averages, Georgia only averaged 7.1 yards per attempt and 3.6 yards per carry. Alabama had a very good defensive performance on Saturday.
Absolutely. And you're talking about Alabama scoring quickly. Their longest drive of the game was 2 minutes and 57 seconds. That was a 6-play, 80-yard touchdown drive. They only had the ball for 25 minutes in this game. Something you're talking about, this Georgia team in explosive plays, they are actually 14th in the nation in long scrimmage plays, meaning just like the collective average of like 10, 20, 30, 40 yard, whatever.
Is that what they're allowing on defense or what they're getting on offense?
What they're getting on offense. Okay. But the thing is, to your point, they've not played anybody this year, Paul. So it's just like you have
to... played nobody, Paul!
You have to balance that out. Their strength of schedule is 27th nationally. That's not, I don't think, the caliber of somebody that should be expected to compete.
It's what?
It's 27th nationally.
Really? I've seen some other metrics that have put it at like 50.
I wouldn't doubt that. But yeah. Point being, whatever it is, you look at the teams that they played, regardless of strength of schedule, it doesn't look like a playoff caliber resume, especially with the way that it ended so sourly.
Well, for the first time this year, they encountered a pressure-packed situation. And I'm not just talking about, by nature, the fact that you went to a conference championship game, but they got put behind. And what's crazy is they were up 10-0 in this game. Mm-hmm. Georgia led 10-0 early on, and you thought, well, maybe they're beginning to establish this game the way that they want to where most teams wouldn't even be able to overcome that 10-point deficit because you didn't feel confident that you were going to be able to keep them off the scoreboard. And you also, most teams, like I said, have not been able to score 14 points on Georgia all year long. But Alabama's one of those teams in college football that has a great offense that could do that. They exploited the secondary, threw all over them. Bryce Young had 421 passing yards, 9.6 yards per pass. It wasn't the most efficient from a completion percentage standpoint. He was 26 for 44. It's not good, not great, but it's fine. It's above average. But the big plays, man, they gave up a ton of big plays on defense in the passing game. And that's how you get those quick scoring drives. And Alabama just diced them up. 24 points in the second quarter. And at that point, once you gave up 24 in the second quarter, Georgia's over here, you know, reeling. It's like they took a flurry of punches in a boxing match and they got put on the ropes and they got saved by the bell at halftime and they got to go in the locker room and then Alabama came into the next round and just continued the pummeling.
So Sports Reference says 20th. Or it's 27th. ESPN says 20th. It's somewhere around there. It's not among the college football's best. Talking about explosive plays from Alabama, though, it's another tribute to this offensive line for Alabama and the way that they played.
I wonder if playing Alabama boosted that for them.
Boosted it? It probably did.
I would like to know regular season strength of schedule for Georgia.
Just want to point out, by the way, Georgia is still ranked first in ESPN's FPI after beating Alabama.
After losing to Alabama.
Yeah, they have a FPI rank of 28.5, They have an FPI rank of 28.5, Alabama 25.5, 3 points lower.
Who's the best team in college football?
Right now, I think it is Alabama after seeing the way that they beat Georgia. I honestly do. It's either Alabama or Michigan. I think Michigan has a legitimate shot to beat Georgia.
This is a compound answer, but I really don't know.
Boo.
It's a lot of matchups for me in this playoff, and we'll talk about that throughout the show. It's a lot of matchups for me here. It's who's playing who. We saw on Saturday that Alabama was a really bad matchup for Georgia, but is Alabama a really bad matchup for Michigan? How different is Alabama from Ohio State in the way that they like to play? And we saw what Michigan was able to do, right? The question comes down to, can Michigan not fall apart from a defensive standpoint and not give up big plays like Georgia did, right? Can they make Bryce Young earn it? You know, I'm not ready to say that Alabama's all of a sudden fixed all of their issues that they had in the Iron Bowl either. Likewise, I'm not ready to say that Georgia's not a very good football team. I think they are. It's just all about matchups for me in this playoff. So I think it's really, really hard to pinpoint who the most complete team is going into this college football playoff, which makes it particularly intriguing. But at the end of the day, there's just two games. There's not a ton of different matchups. You've got Alabama-Cincinnati, which I think everybody in this room favors Alabama in at this point. I'm not writing Cincinnati off. I think it's an intriguing game from a pass defense perspective if you're Cincinnati. But Michigan-Georgia's is no clash of styles. That is identical. That's two brick walls running into each other over and over again. It's a wrestling match.
It's going to be really fun to see that game. I think that is going to be just a phenomenal semifinal game. And talking about Cincinnati real quick, while they may have one of the best pass defenses in the nation, I think you could have also made the same argument for Georgia and the fact that their defense was playing really well heading into that SEC championship game. And I would also make the argument that Georgia's record, they've played more, their quality of opponent is better than what Cincinnati was facing week in and week out in the AAC.
If this show was on television, somebody would be queuing up a frame that says, meanwhile, ... Auburn is playing in the Birmingham Bowl on December 28th. We'll talk about that when we come back. You're listening to On the Line. Back on the Line, Noah Gardner and Lance Dawn with you on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central, Alabama. Number to call, 334-321-1390. We want to hear from you. Talking about the SEC championship game from this past weekend, the college football playoff, as well as meanwhile, Auburn is headed 2 hours up the road to Birmingham, Alabama to play in the Birmingham Bowl. Lance, how do you feel about this? Because you've already got your tickets.
Well, actually, I told Sting this. I bought tickets before it was officially announced because I just knew that it was going to happen. I was just like, you know what? Forget it. I can already buy tickets. I'm going to the website. Yeah, I was like, I know we're playing in the Birmingham Bowl. I just don't know if it's going to be UCF.
Your financial decision is a living meme.
Yes, exactly. And let me tell you something. Auburn heading to the Birmingham Bowl is somewhat of a meme because you and I were talking about it off air. It's just like Auburn probably could have been selected to go play in another bowl game. It's just proximity, and that will sell tickets. And I think that is frustrating to me because I would have liked to have seen Auburn play somebody else other than number 20 Houston.
Well, Auburn fans travel.
Yes,
they do. They travel to bowl games. They travel well. And there's only one bowl game that I think after we've seen how everything has shook out, you could say, all right, Auburn deserved to be in that bowl game over the Birmingham Bowl, and that is the Texas Bowl. I think Auburn has a legitimate claim to that because the Texas Bowl undeniably is a better bowl game than the Birmingham Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Why in the world is LSU there and not Auburn? Why? Proximity. LSU is a lot closer to Houston than Auburn is to Houston, right? I get that. Auburn is a lot closer to Birmingham than they would be to Houston. So from a ticket standpoint, the SEC says this is better for these two fan bases to be playing closer to home. But from my perspective, what's so fun about bowl games is that you get to travel. It's a fun holiday trip, not just for the fans, but also for the players. But there is the flip side of that. We're also the guys here at Auburn. What's great for this group of players is they can go home, I'm sure. They'll have a chance to spend Christmas with their families when you're not going off to, you know, New Orleans or some other place that's a lot further away than Birmingham. You know, that's a drive up that day kind of thing. I mean, they'll probably stay in a hotel room, but like they don't have to. Yeah, but on the flip side of it, it also is like, are these guys even excited about the bowl festivities, or is it just going to be like a business trip? We're going to play football. And I think that's what it more is going to be like rather than getting to go. And a lot of people will say, well, that's what it should be about. But also, I think it should be about guys enjoying themselves with their teammates through all the bowl festivities and stuff that they put on. And I'm sure the Birmingham Bowl does a fine job for their bowl festivities, but these guys have all been to Birmingham before probably to go and play Top Golf or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, I just think there would have been a more ideal destination for Auburn to be playing in a bowl game. The one that I point to is the Texas Bowl, where you could have said, hey, Auburn should be playing there because they beat LSU and finished higher than them in the standings. But, of course, that's not the only factor in how they select the bowl games. They let you know that it's about proximity, too, when you look at the way that they do their selection process, and that's what hurt Auburn, I think, at the end of the day.
I'm going to be honest. This may be because we are close to Birmingham, and I've been there so many different times. By the way, some of these guys on roster are probably from Birmingham. For me, personally, I just think it's a lame bowl destination. I'm not going to lie. Like, if the Birmingham Bowl ceased to exist, I don't think anybody would really bat an eye. It's not a fantastic destination to go to. Like you said, you're talking about bowl festivities. What is there to do for the Tickets Smarter, I think it is. It's not Ticketmaster. I think it's Ticket Smarter Birmingham Bowl. What are the festivities along with that, honestly. Like, Houston's probably going to have a good time because they're coming from out of town. It's a new experience for them. But for Auburn, for fans, who cares? I'm, like you said, I'm going to drive up the day of, and I'm going to drive home immediately. I'm not going to try and enjoy the town. If this was Arlington or if this was Houston, I'd probably go, and I'd probably want to sightsee a little bit.
You'd spend a couple of days.
Yeah, absolutely.
You'd make a trip out of it.
Yeah. So for me, this is like, I'm going because I want to support my team, and I've never been to a neutral site game or even an away game where Auburn's played before, so I want to see it. But like, the choice could have been better, I feel like. But again, like you said, a lot of it does come back to revenue, and a lot of it does come back to proximity.
And it's 11 a.m.
Yeah. I'm going to be getting up early for that one.
11 a.m. on ESPN, December 28th, Auburn against Houston. Look, Auburn's got a chance to win this game. They're favored by 3. I think it's a fun opponent getting to play Houston. Something that can work in Auburn's favor here is they're getting to play a top 20 team. And the fact that it is locally, as I just said, makes it feel a lot more like a business trip and about football. Last time Auburn played in this bowl game, what'd they do? They hammered the upstart team out of the American Athletic Conference at the time, Memphis. They dropped Paxton Lynch's draft stock like lead in water.
Yeah.
Okay, I think they could do something similar, not necessarily draft stock related, because I don't know how Houston's draft stock looks for some of their guys, but I think that you could see Auburn approach this game like a business trip. Take a lot of pride in the fact that they're playing a ranked team. Auburn's going to get up for this one, I think, as opposed to all the other times where we've questioned, does Auburn even want to be in this bowl game? I think they're going to want to go there and win it.
Yeah, I agree. And I will say this, though. I think that Memphis team was not as put together as this Houston team. I think they all rallied around Paxton Lynch and what he did as a quarterback, but I think that this team, I think they've got a lot more pieces, and obviously I think their record reflects that they're a little bit more talented, so it's going to be a tough challenge for sure.
On the other side of this break, we're going to talk with Jeremy Law of Radio Alabama Sports. We'll be back with more of On the Line on the other side of this break.
Stay on the line. More of the show when we come back.
30 minutes through hour number one of On the Line. Noah Gardner and Lance Dahl with you on ESPN 106.7 and Fox Sports Central Alabama. Joining us as promised, he's been waiting for this moment. Jeremy Law, RadioAlabamaSports.net is with us on the line. Jeremy, how you doing today, my man?
Lance. We started off last week's call with a blowout in the SEC championship game comment, but it was just a blowout the other way. How's life on the plains, guys?
Well, I'm not going to lie. Going to the Birmingham Bowl is not lifting any of our spirits, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I was going to go to the Birmingham Bowl, but I work at 11 a.m. on Tuesdays, so I'm not going to be able to make it.
Well, it's I'm going half-heartedly, but yeah, you're right. It was a blowout in the SEC championship game. What were your thoughts about the way the Crimson Tide exposed Georgia?
Everybody keeps saying they exposed Georgia, but I mean, Bryce Young is Bryce Young. I mean, Alabama's been talking. Alabama fans, at least, have been saying for the last 7 or 8 weeks, if Alabama can find something up front, some type of consistency. I mean, not even a push, just a body to get in the way of a pass rusher, which they could not do at Auburn. And I think last week, I mean, Saturday proved, I mean, even more, I mean, Derek Mason came in with a plan of his life in the Iron Bowl, and it almost worked. And you kind of ask yourself why Georgia didn't come in with the same plan. They brought 4 a lot, brought 5 a lot, but they never really brought 6 or 7 the way that Derek Mason was doing. And Bryce Young had enough time to pick them apart, and, you know, nobody's really tested that Georgia secondary. But Alabama came in, guys, with their backs against the wall. They had to win that game. At least they felt like they had to going in to make the playoff. Now, after halftime, you could have made the argument that Alabama was probably going to get in no matter what if they ended up winning or losing that game at the end. But, you know, nobody's really – the Alabama's back is against the wall. They gave it everything they had, and it kind of looked like they did. And – you know, if Brock Bowers, like, catches that one in the end zone and, you know, Stetson doesn't throw a pick six and there's, you know, they don't go forward, they're able to kick a field goal there. You know, maybe it's a little closer at the end of the day, but, man, Alabama's offensive line, they stepped up to the plate. Alabama secondary still didn't look great. They continue to let one guy beat them. It feels like almost every game, whether it's Treylon Burks, whether it's Brock Bowers, I mean, whether it's Jalen Wydermyer or whoever that may be, it still seems like they're struggling to stop a lot of teams' bread and butter. But on the defensive side of the ball, guys, go look at CFBstats.com or wherever you get your stats. Georgia's defensive line or their rush defense has given up like 1.2 less yards per game on the ground than Alabama's defensive line. I think Alabama's defense, really, especially up front, came in with a point to prove that, you know, Georgia's defensive line, you know, isn't really better than ours. And I think they showed. I mean, Alabama had more rushing yards than Georgia, and a lot of that came off scrambles from Bryce Young, so be it. But Stetson Bennett is supposed to be a world-class scrambler, too, who makes a lot of plays with his feet. And we know he's not as athletic as Bryce Young, but, man, I'm telling you, Alabama came into play, and they proved that they're still one of the elite in college football, which is something that not just everybody else was questioning, but I was questioning last week. And I think it was rightfully so, because it all starts up front. And if you're not elite up front, or at least good up front, it can really hamper what you're trying to do. Is I think Alabama at least proved on their best day they're still one of the most elite teams in college football.
For me, this ball game was not about scheme. It wasn't about what either team was going to do on the offensive or defensive side of the football. When you looked at it on paper, a lot of us, including you, were wondering how Alabama was going to be able to move the football against that defense. And at the end of the day, I think the way that I'm summing up this ball game is that Alabama wanted it. And you just don't overcome offensive line issues like that with scheme, like Alabama was exhibiting throughout the season. You overcome it with want to, and Alabama had a lot of want to on Saturday.
Yeah, I think it was the want to, but I mean, I don't question anybody. I will not come at anybody other than poking at Lance to open the segment about thinking that this was going to be a rout, because at the start of the second quarter, when the first play of the second frame goes for a tutty, I think a lot of people, including me, were thinking, dang, dude, they might do what a lot of people thought that they were going to do. 10-0, you're not moving the ball. Your offensive line looked like it was holding up in the first quarter, but, man, Georgia is marching, and they were ripping off some kind of big runs there in the first quarter, getting some big chunk carries at 5, 6, 7 yards. And I mean, I don't blame anybody for thinking that Georgia was going to blow the doors off of Alabama, considering what you had seen from Alabama, especially from the LSU game on in the trenches up front on the offensive line. So I don't question anybody for that. I think it was probably the right pick. Vegas thought the same thing. Listen, setting Alabama as a 6.5-point underdog is a pretty brave thing. And there was a lot of people taking that, and a lot of people felt like Alabama was going to get beat like that. And Nick Saban used it for motivation, but I think, you know, that you're probably, at least it feels like you're going to have to play them twice. There's a really good shot you do. I mean, if they beat Michigan, you're probably going to beat Cincinnati, or you should beat Cincinnati, and you're playing those guys again. So what happens at that point? And for Alabama, you got to be more consistent. I was listening to you guys earlier. There's nothing to show that Alabama could consistently play a full four-quarter game that well up front, because they haven't done it since the Ole Miss game, quite frankly, or at least Mississippi State, who's an inferior opponent. And they finally put four quarters together. And I think the key really was, man, it was a lights-out performance for Bryce Young, but it wasn't this – he wasn't a 30-for-33 with four touchdowns, you know, but he had a good completion percentage. He didn't play out of his mind, I guess you say, but what if the next time they play, Bryce Young plays out of his mind? What if he puts up a 35-for-41 stat line? I mean, because we still – like, Bryce Young has that in him. He didn't play out of his mind, and it was still more than enough to beat Georgia and Atlanta.
Yeah, and you're talking about Bryce Young's performance. He finished with a 59% completion percentage. It's not a world beater, but he ripped off a lot of big plays, and those big plays are the decider. Earlier in the call, you said that you don't know if Georgia's been exposed by this game, and I still think they're a very good football team, but I am questioning that secondary going into the playoff.
Well, now, Jameson Williams, he's gotten behind everybody, and he's made those plays against everybody, other than Auburn, because he got himself ejected. And he might not have gotten one in that one. But he's made those plays versus everybody. But now the key in the playoff for Alabama is really, can somebody else step up? Your running back room will be back healthy at least a little bit with Sanders and Robinson. But now that Mechie's gone, man, Mechie was more than a security blanket, but it felt like he was Bryce's security blanket. On a 3rd-and-7, I mean, you're probably not throwing it 400 yards in the air to J-Mo. You were looking for Mechie over the middle, and he's been really good for Bryce in big situations. And with Mechie out, yeah, you recruited the receiver room well, but, I mean, you kind of see it. There's flashes for those guys. Sometimes they run the wrong route. Sometimes things happen, and they're just young receivers. So somebody's got to step up in that spot. But you also can't let, you know, Brock Bowers catch for whatever he called for, like average like 13 yards a catch, and he beats you all day, and Stetson Bennett, the mailman, you know, throwing for 300 on you. Now, he probably should have thrown two pick sixes. You dropped one on their first drive, but you still want to see a little more out of Alabama's secondary than you saw. And I thought Dan Mullen did a good job on SEC Football Final talking about why teams have so much confidence against Pete Golding throwing against his secondary. Dan Mullen said he doesn't really mix it up. So maybe Pete Golding mixes it up a little bit more. But Alabama, man, it was a dominant win. Now you face Cincinnati, and I know Alabama fans are already trying to find as much Cincinnati tape as possible because all you've heard all year is that they've only beaten Notre Dame, and Notre Dame didn't beat anybody, so how good are these guys? Well, they're one of these teams, guys, with a chip on their shoulder. They're coming in here with something to prove in a meaningful bowl game. So if you're Alabama, the excuse of it's the Sugar Bowl, it doesn't matter, and things like that, like that's not happening in this one. And Cincinnati, they don't just want to be the first non-Power 5 team to make the playoff. They want to be the first non-Power 5 team to win the playoff. So Alabama, I still think they're going to have their hands full a little bit against Cincinnati, a team that really wants to prove everybody wrong.
In your eyes, who's the best team in the playoff?
If Alabama plays like they did against Georgia, they are. In any given game, Alabama is. But can they consistently do it? They finished the season with two top eight wins, three top 25 wins, I believe. So, I mean, they had the best resume of all the teams after it was all said and done, after beating Georgia in the top four. They had the number one strength of record or so, is number one strength of schedule. They played 10 of the top 40 teams, according to ESPN's FPI. So after it was all said and done, they had the best resume and they had the best win. But can they consistently play with that type of intensity? Can Nick Saban consistently find ways to motivate his team above what should be enough motivation to win a national title? Can he keep the guys hungry? Can they stay focused on Cincinnati? I think those are all the questions that that Alabama fans are asking themselves, because it feels really good to beat Georgia. They've already put the 2021 SEC championship digit on the wall in the practice facility. That's phenomenal. It's great. But if you're Alabama, there's one goal all year, one main goal. All the other ones are sub-goals. It really is about national title or bust here for Alabama. And with the Heisman Trophy winning quarterback, you're going to be expected to go into this playoff and win it all, ranked number one.
Well, obviously, there were lofty goals for this football team for Alabama, but after beating Gonzaga on Saturday, there are some lofty expectations for this Alabama basketball team. What are your thoughts on the Crimson Tide and Nate Oates right now?
I'm not trying to downplay Alabama's win against Gonzaga at all. At all. That's a phenomenal, humongous win. Alabama just lost to Iona. Okay, you can win or lose on any given night in college basketball, and what they did Saturday night, you're in Seattle, you beat Gonzaga, you're a major underdog, they get that win, but it's basketball, guys. You got to stay focused because, I mean, you have good wins, you have good losses, and the committee looks at all that at the end of the year. They need to refocus, get back ready. To get back, I think they were playing on their home floor Saturday. It's Houston, I believe. So, I mean, they have another big-time opponent in. And that's the thing about basketball. I mean, you guys know that. You follow Auburn basketball really well. And you can't just let a big win like Gonzaga, you know, get you super amped or at least get you off keel, because you got to come back and you got to win. It's basketball. You got to win the games that you're supposed to win, and you got to go win some games that you're not supposed to win to put together a complete solid resume for the committee to look at the end of the year. But Jaden Shackelford goes off. Nate Oates had a phenomenal game plan. They weathered the storm from Drew Timmy, who probably should be wearing crimson and white and might be asking himself why he's not wearing crimson and white right now. But that's a phenomenal win. But if you know anything about Nate Oates, he's getting his guys ready to get back on the floor.
And just to reiterate your point about the topsy-turvy nature of basketball, Duke beats Gonzaga 2 weeks ago, loses in their next game to Ohio State by blowing a lead. Now you got a new number one in Purdue who is atop the AP poll for the first time ever in program history. And then on top of that, let's go back to the team that we were just talking about with Gonzaga. After they lose to Duke, they play a really poor basketball game against Tarleton State, of all teams, trying to figure out who that is. And then they followed up with a loss to Alabama. So I'm not downplaying Alabama's win whatsoever, just like you. It's a huge program-building win, and it pole vaults Alabama inside the top 10 for the AP poll, which they exactly deserve to be there. But you are right. Basketball is weird, and it's even weirder in the non-conference than it is in conference play. Jeremy, we appreciate you taking the time to speak with us, my man. Hope you have a good rest of your week, bud.
Thanks, guys. Lance, I love you.
appreciate it, Jeremy.
All love from Jeremy Law of Radio Alabama Sports here on the line with us midway through hour number one. It was a big win for Alabama nonetheless on the hardwood. Topsy-turvy nature of college basketball. Won't downplay that win, though. Alabama basketball is looking scary right now to a lot of teams that have to play them come conference play.
With the amount of height that Gonzaga has, I'm so surprised that Shackelford and Alabama were able to get to the rim so easily. It was just really, really impressive.
I think folks are getting enough film on Holmgren right now to figure out how to exploit him down low. But even outside of Holmgren, Drew Timmy's still one of the best bigs in the game. Yeah. And I don't understand why Gonzaga's front court couldn't defend better than what they did. Granted, the backcourt's pretty solid too, but it's not as good of a backcourt. And this is why I had questions about whether Gonzaga would be able to do what they did last year again. Which, through the onset of the season, I think the answer to that is undeniably no. Not that they won't make it to the national championship, but Gonzaga certainly has started slower this season than they did last year. There's no denying that. They've already taken two losses, and one of them, I think you could say, really was in an underdog-like scenario. I think Gonzaga was favored by 10 or so in that game against Alabama. So big win for Alabama to be able to pull that upset on the road in Seattle. I think this Alabama team's really good, but I loved that Jeremy brought up. Look, a week ago they lost to Iona, so I'm trying to figure out what went from Iona to Gonzaga, what changed. And I don't know if a lot changed. I just think Alabama, you know, it's basketball, and the way that Alabama plays basketball, if they're shooting it well, they can beat anybody. If they're not, they can lose to anybody, and that's how they lost to Iona.
Well, they've got a really difficult matchup coming up this weekend. They're going to be at home against number 14, Houston. That's going to be a game to watch.
And Houston plays great defense.
Yep.
That's been the center. They have become the new Virginia. They are doing what Virginia does better than what Virginia is doing right now, which Virginia is in a bad spot.
Yep.
Virginia does not look good to open up this year. Pack line defense, not as efficient as it typically is. We're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to tell you what's going on in live sports tonight and get you set for tonight's evening slate of games in all of the sports happening. We'll be back. You're listening to On the Line. Wrapping up hour number one of the Monday edition of On the Line. Big thank you there to Jeremy Law of Radio Alabama Sports for joining us. If you missed any of today's show so far, go and find the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio. Talked Auburn headed to the Birmingham Bowl, Alabama clobbering Georgia in the SEC Championship. We'll have a fun hour number two coming up at 3 p.m. as well, so stay tuned for the entire show, as well as from 4 to 6 p.m. It'll be The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. Before we get to what's on TV tonight, I want to take a look at this week's Point Broadband High School Player of the Week, and it's Auburn High School's Jakeith Carr. In a three-game week for the Tigers, Carr averaged 16.3 points per game, including a game-winning shot to lift Auburn past Benjamin Russell. The Tigers are back in action this week with games against Elmore County, Beauregard, and Lochapoca. Jakeith Carr, your Point Broadband High School Player of the Week. Point Broadband, smarter, faster fiber internet, point-broadband.com. All right, Sting, hit that hotkey. Let's take a listen to what's on TV tonight. The live semifinal top eight performances of The Voice are on NBC from 7 to 9 p.m. Two new episodes of NCIS and NCIS Hawaii are on CBS at 8 and 9. A new episode of Holiday Baking Championship is on Food Network at 7 p.m. for all those folks out there that like to see folks making Yule logs and all the good stuff from the holiday season. Movie selections for tonight, Four Christmases is on AMC at 7. The Santa Claus and The Santa Claus 2 is back-to-back on Freeform at 5:20 p.m. A Christmas Story is on TNT at 7 p.m. A little bit lower of the amount of games that we've had typically for Monday nights. College basketball, there's only one game tonight. There's not a whole lot going on in live sports. Monday Night Football's on ESPN at 7:15 p.m. with a key AFC East matchup between the Pats and the Bills. Game is for the top of the division. College basketball, you got a Big Ten battle between Illinois and Iowa at 6 p.m. on FS1. And then on NBA TV, there's one game tonight, 6 p.m. The Oklahoma City Thunder are at the Detroit Pistons. Lance, what are you going to be turning your clicker to tonight?
Most likely that Illinois versus Iowa matchup on FS1 at 6. That's probably what I'm going to be watching. And like you said, there's not a lot of college basketball on tonight as there have been over the past couple weeks, but that could be a really fun game.
It's pretty much the only good game tonight. There's a lot of mid-majors in action. I don't know why everybody took this Monday off of all Mondays. Well, think about it. It's finals week everywhere.
It is.
That's why. This is going to be a down week for basketball, probably. I haven't looked at the full schedule for this week, but conference play has started in the ACC, the Big Ten, and the Pac-12. At least among power conferences, those are the ones that come to mind right now that I know have started for sure. Maybe there's a small conference out there that decided to do the same thing. That's what's so intriguing about this Illinois-Iowa game. Illinois has underachieved this year. Iowa didn't come into the year in the top 25. They beat Virginia really bad a week or two ago. I don't think that this is a bad Illinois team. I don't think this is a bad Iowa team, but I still think these two teams are figuring things out in the early stages of the season and conference play.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I will say, though, we're talking about the Hawkeyes here with their really impressive win over Virginia. In no way do I think Virginia is a bad basketball team. It's impressive whenever you defeat a style of basketball like that. And now that I was living in the post-Luka Garza years, I'm really interested to see how they carry on offensively. Obviously, with also the loss of C.J. Frederick and the transfer portal, do they now turn to their guards and their shooters to kind of elevate their style of play? Right now, their leading scorer is their forward, Keegan Murray. He was one of those pieces on that Iowa team last year, averaging 24 points a game. Absolutely insane.
61.2% from the field. Iowa 2.5-point favorites tonight against Illinois, which Kofi Coburn's playing very well right now for the Fighting Illini, but outside of Coburn, they need some help because last week, I think Coburn averaged like, there was a stat I saw where Coburn over like his last three or five games, something like that, he was averaging 29 points a game. Mm-hmm. He was having an unreal stretch of play. Iowa right now averaging 91 points a game going against an Illinois defense that is giving up just 63. It's going to be a fun game tonight. Iowa took Purdue, who is your new number one in college basketball. They took him to the wire, only lost by 7 on December 3rd, so last Friday night. Short turnaround. Let's see what they can do. That is it for hour number one of On the Line. We'll be back with hour number two coming up with Making Headlines, Coaching Carousel. They finally fired Manny Diaz. We'll be back.
You are On the Line. Live on Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga and in Auburn on ESPN 106.7 or online on FoxSports983.com and ESPNAU.com. You are On the Line with Noah Gardner and Lance Daw. Join the show by calling in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Hour number two of On the Line. Noah Gardner and Lance Daw with you on ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central Alabama. Number to call, 334-321-1390. That'll put you through to us here on the show. We want to talk to you about anything going on in the sports world, whatever your thoughts are on Auburn headed to the Birmingham Bowl, the SEC Championship, and beyond. We'll talk to you about it here on the Monday edition of the show. And to those folks out there listening to us on the podcast, we salute you to you in the future. But we're going to start off hour number two with Making Headlines, as we do most days. And starting off with the first headline, multiple reports are out that Mario Cristobal is leaving Oregon for Miami early hours of today. The reports came out that Manny Diaz had been let go after the gross weekend that it was of all the stuff that you heard and read about Miami looking for his replacement while he was still on staff?
Oh, I was just turning on my mic to join in. I think it's terrible how they did that. If you're going to fire a guy, then just fire him. Don't publicly search for his replacement.
Right.
And then wait until you have a deal to fire him, because I believe he was on the road recruiting for them.
Yeah, with the way the reports that were coming out with like McMurphy and all these different people talking about the athletic director search and all these different things, the way the committee was handling it in the coaching carousel and all that different stuff, it was just absolutely just terrible. And Manny Diaz actually just a little bit ago put out a tweet and put out a very long just a discussion about how he feels about the program. He said, "I am disappointed in the university's decision and in the manner in which this played out over the last few weeks. The uncertainty impacted our team, our staff, and their families. These are real people that gave everything to this program. For them, I hurt. Our players have proven their resiliency, though, so I know they will regroup and move forward with class, toughness, and unity. That is who they are. That is what we're about. I am thankful I had the honor to lead these young men and will cherish every minute of our time together." And then he continues to talk, but that's essentially the gist of it, is he is not pleased with the way that the university went about it.
I think it's refreshing to see himself stick up for himself. I think that's refreshing to see that. And I know some other coaches and some other personalities came out over the weekend in support of him as well. Not necessarily in support of the university keeping Manny Diaz to be the head coach, but to have handled this in a different way, which you and I have talked about this being a potential opening for quite some time and never had the chance to be a potential opening.
Say it again. I'm sorry. I was reading about Manny Diaz.
Like, we talked about this being a potential opening for quite some time.
Oh, yeah.
When Miami
sure.
was 4-6, you and I were talking about this, or 4-5, excuse me. We were talking about this being a potential opening. Of course, there were reports that Lane Kiffin was possibly going to end up being the head coach here, that he had a lot of interest in it. I think he inked a new deal with Ole Miss over the weekend, if I remember correctly. I mean, you look at it, like, this never ended up being an opening,
though. It
was
never technically open. That's yeah. great.
Yeah, that's not great. That's a very sad
thing.
I know,
like, it's terrible, but it's kind of a funny connection.
So the entire time that we have been discussing this, for what feels like not a month or so now, the job was never at any point open, even over this course of this weekend, whenever there were reports that even...
Only for like a couple hours until it was finally announced that Cristobal
was
going.
Right, ESPN was even discussing it, and they were saying, look, the job hasn't opened up yet, but there are reports that it might. So, I mean, we're just talking about it here as if it has already. And it was just a very weak way, I feel like, for Miami to handle things, and just to have everything out publicly just didn't seem right. But Cristobal is now officially the head coach. He was one of the guys that we thought could potentially make the move from Oregon to Miami. And now the Oregon job's open.
Exactly. Another major job in college football is open. So how does that further affect the dominoes falling in this coaching carousel? Because all the dust seemed to have settled. Oklahoma went and hired, and we'll get to this one in a second. I don't want to talk about the Oklahoma job yet, but Oklahoma went and hired a coordinator, so nobody lost a head coach to replace the loss at Oklahoma. Well, now Oregon has lost there, so where do they go right now?
Right.
And seemingly, this could be a time in the Pac-12 power struggle where if Oregon does not get the right guy, USC, UCLA, the Pac-12 power balance could be headed back to Los Angeles.
It absolutely could. And I also think that you have to keep an eye out, not just on USC, but UCLA with Chip Kelly. How much longer does he stay with the Bruins? And he's had some success this year. I believe they're 8-4, right, if I'm not mistaken?
8-4, playing in the Holiday Bowl against NC State.
That should be fun. That should be fun.
I think he's done a great job. UCLA cannot be ticked off about what Chip Kelly has done at UCLA.
He's built them back up to where they're like a legitimate program, and I respect that. And I really hope that whenever DTR does leave at the end of the season, he's able to pick right back up, and he's able to continue to build this program. Because like you said, watching USC and UCLA in the coming years, I mean, Chip Kelly versus Lincoln Riley, that could be really fun to watch.
And that'll tell you whether or not this program, if he's built it to the level of which it's sustainable. Because he had a senior class-laden team this year. He had a quarterback that has been here for a while. And in the previous seasons, last year was his best year to date, and then this year he followed it up with an 8-4 season. Chip Kelly has slowly gotten better year in and year out. And part of me is asking the question, okay, is that because he just had all of this talent stay with him for 4 years? He built it up to that level? Or Is this, you know, a situation where he's actually fleshed things out behind this group that's continually gotten older and older? And, you know, he's only had success in college. He has not been, there has not been a stop in college where he has been unsuccessful and even had a little bit of success in the NFL before things soured, which we know things can sour a lot quicker in the NFL than it can in college. So I'm thinking, you know, he's got the program probably at a place where the power balance could be shifting back to Los Angeles instead of being in the Pacific Northwest with Oregon and Washington for what it had been for so many years. Now, it seems like things could be shifting back to L.A., which is interesting for me. I don't know what Oregon's going to do as far as finding a coach. I don't know what direction they're going to go in for this. I haven't even looked at candidates yet for this opening just because it's so fresh and so much of the dust has already settled. Oregon is in a very unenviable position. They are the last to the table of a feast of the coaching carousel, and nothing's left but the scraps.
So I just pulled up, I just literally Googled just candidates to replace Mario Cristobal. So these are the six that this article has. Dave Aranda, Joe Brady, Josh Heupel, not going to happen, Luke Fickle, Matt Campbell, and Chip Kelly.
Yeah. Oh, Chip Kelly to Oregon would be enticing.
And Justin Wilcox at California. But I would not touch that with a 10-foot pole, no sir.
Yeah. Joe Brady seems intriguing.
That is interesting, yeah.
Hasn't he been reported to hate recruiting, though?
Yeah, so, I mean,
a lot of guys that go to the NFL, but he's looking for a job, and is somebody going to hire him in the NFL?
Well, that's the question. Fortunately, he's coming to Auburn here in just a few short days. I'm kidding.
That would be
incredible. If it's Zach Hill, by the way, I just want to say, if it is Zach Hill that's Auburn's offensive coordinator real quick, we are going to have to do a deep dive into the quarterbacks that he's had because he has been very inconsistent with the way that he has coached.
Interesting.
Or the product he has put out at QB. It's been very up and down.
So Oregon's got an opening now. I don't know where they're going to go for a guy. I don't know who's a good fit for that, but it's definitely an intriguing situation there in Eugene. And with the fact that they're coming into the coaching carousel late, that makes me feel like that USC's got their guy that they like. UCLA's got their guy that they like. Unless Chip Kelly goes back to Oregon for some reason, but Lance, you seem to be laughing about something.
Yeah, I pulled up another article with coaching candidates. Okay, so get this. So Tony Elliott is on this list. Brian Harsin is on the list for candidates at Oregon. Oh, man. Oy vey. Dan Lanning, the defensive coordinator for Georgia. Justin Wilcox is on here again. And yeah, there's some other candidates that just that's never going to happen. So I just thought it was really entertaining. Brian Harsin on different people's lists. It's not happening.
I don't know.
You think you would leave Auburn for Oregon? That Nike money.
Who's the better job right now?
Oregon.
Where is it easier to win?
Oregon.
Who's ranked and who's not?
Oregon.
Who's just got 10 wins and who doesn't?
But would he do that?
I don't know. Yeah. I doubt it. To answer your question, I doubt it. But to say, like, why would someone leave Auburn for Oregon? No offense to Auburn. I'm just saying it's a little bit easier to win out there in the Pacific Northwest, especially when we're talking about a guy who came from that area already. Right.
Yeah, but I think part of that is also like winning like championships and playoff games. And I think Auburn, like with the resources that they have, if they manage to make it out of the SEC, I think they have a better shot at doing so. But
I think
Oregon is a phenomenal program and you can 100% win there.
Let's head to the phone lines 334-321-1390. Inspector's on the line with us. Spectre, how's it going?
Yeah, pretty good. Kind of weird out here.
Yeah, this is the weather that I do not like. When it rains in the winter, that's a no-go for me. I hate it.
Yeah, it's going to be cold tomorrow, guys. You better put your turtleneck on.
I don't do turtlenecks, but I will definitely I'll definitely wear a jacket.
Hey, you guys remember what I told you about Nick Saban? If he loses a game, or in this case, taken to four overtimes in the Iron Bowl?
He responds well.
Yes, he came back with a vengeance.
Yeah, and my question is whether or not he can sustain it, you know, going through the rest of the playoff.
Well, that's just it. I mean, I don't know how much time is it between now and the first game?
They play on New Year's Eve.
Oh yeah, that's too much time. These guys are going to be too soft. I expect them to have a rough start, if anything. But all Saban needs is a loss or taking to four overtimes in the Iron Bowl. But he's red hot.
And I think this playoff's all about matchups, too. You know, I think Alabama's a really bad matchup for Georgia. But likewise, Michigan could end up being a really bad matchup for Alabama because Alabama seems to be built in a similar way to Ohio State. We all saw what Michigan did to Ohio State. But then again, talent ends up winning out a lot of times, and Alabama and Georgia are the two most talented teams in this playoff. So we might be seeing a rematch like we did in 17.
Yeah, I'll be right there. I got to go, guys. That's good. I'll talk to you later.
Appreciate it, Spectre. Have a good rest of your day. That was Spectre on the line with us. Number to call, 334-321-1390. Nick Saban always finds a way to adapt. But I will pivot this conversation here to you, Lance. When we have seen Alabama going into a playoff with glaring weaknesses, the weaker Alabama teams, they haven't won national championships.
Yeah, and I still think that while it was impressive what Alabama did on the offensive line against Georgia this past weekend, I'm interested to see how do they handle Cincinnati, and then how do they handle Georgia either again, or how do they handle Michigan, and they've got a very legitimate front as well. So it's not like everything's going to be peachy keen for Alabama. They're going to have some legitimate competition that they're facing, and like you said, this has been somewhat of a down year for Alabama. It feels like even with that win over Georgia, you have to look at the regular season product and say, okay, this is not what we're typically used to seeing. And like you just said, those type of teams normally don't win national titles.
Let's head to our next headline here in Making Headlines, our first segment of hour number two. Clemson defensive coordinator Brent Venables changed the title. He's the head coach at Oklahoma now. Back to where it all started.
Yeah, he was the co-defensive coordinator, I believe, from in the early 1990s all the way up until 2000.
Late 90s, early 2000s, and then he was the DC from 04 to 11.
Yeah, he's been out of Oklahoma before. He's been there for quite some time. I'm curious to see what a defensive-minded coach in the Big 12 looks like, and I think there has been a little bit of a resurgence on that side of the ball in the conference as of late.
Oklahoma State, Baylor, West Virginia, Iowa State, all of them play pretty good defense in the grand scheme of things across college football.
So we're keeping that in mind. And then also, how does Venables help ease the move to the SEC? What does that look like? And so I'm just curious to see what these next couple of years look like under him. How does the offense operate? Does Caleb Williams stay? I mean, that's something I'm interested to see. What does this team look like as they move to the Southeastern Conference?
What does... And I don't know all of these off the top of my head, so forgive me, but I think you'll give me a pass on this. What does the Dabo Swinney coaching tree look like of guys that have become head coaches? And I think to Chad Morris is the first guy that comes to mind. It's like, that wasn't good.
Mm-hmm.
So how does Venables do? Does it improve the record of Dabo Swinney proteges that go on to be head coaches? That's going to be interesting. I'm going to go and try and find a Dabo Swinney coaching tree real quick and see if any of those guys became head coaches, but go ahead.
Yeah, I was about to say, I'm just curious to see what that looks like, because like you just said, Chad Morris did not perform very well at Arkansas, and honestly, you know, Venables, he's not gotten the shot to be head coach anywhere, actually.
I'm not counting this, but Billy Napier was with him as offensive coordinator in 2009 and 2010. At the very beginning of Dabo Swinney's time at Clemson, but he was only there for 2 years. I don't know if you can coach that, because he's just kind of bounced around from many different places. I mean, learned from Dabo, I'm sure, but he also could have learned from Nick Saban, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I was about to say. It's like, well, Napier also was under Nick Saban for a little bit. So, yeah, I don't know if it's necessarily fair to look at the Dabo Swinney coaching tree and look at Venables and see if he can perform, because like we're kind of looking at right now, it's pretty limited from what I can understand.
It is. I've got more guys right here, but Brent Venables is by far the most successful of all of those coordinators, so you would expect this to translate a little bit. Sure. But Jeff Scott's another one. He was OC at Clemson, or co-offensive coordinator at Clemson, from 15 to 19, but he had been at Clemson all the way from 2008 to 2019 in various roles, whether it be wide receivers coach, recruiting, co-offensive coordinator, things like that. He's 3-18 at USF as head coach.
Pretty good.
And then we already talked about Chad Morris and how delightful that was for him at Arkansas, but he wasn't bad at SMU. He helped rebuild an SMU program to where we're looking at them right now as a borderline perennial bowl team on a year-to-year basis out of the American Athletic Conference. And then Brent Venables is the other one, a part of this coaching tree that has now gotten to become NCAA head coaches. Only four guys.
Yeah, so again, like you said, it's very limited. So maybe this is the guy out of this Dabo Swinney coaching tree that actually pops off and he performs well. And I mean, you look at those places you're talking about, USF, SMU, Arkansas. Like, I think Oklahoma has the most resources and the most opportunities to succeed out of the programs that we were just talking about.
Yeah, a lot
there.
Of those are tough places to win, and they were low when those coaches got there.
So who knows? Maybe Venables is able to take off. But again, I'm curious to see how he transitions the move to the SEC. Is he going to be there? I don't know.
Moving to our last headline. I'm sure he'll be there. I don't think while he's in the Big 12, he's going to get fired or anything like that. Now, the SEC, that could be, that's where the heat really turns up. But moving to our last headline here in making headlines, Purdue is number one in the AP Top 25 for the first time in college basketball history. Alabama comes in at number nine, and Auburn slots in at number 18.
Purdue ain't playing around this year.
They're good. They got good bigs.
They got really good bigs, and then Alabama has really good guards, and then Auburn is winning the national championship, so those other two teams are irrelevant. But I'm kidding. But Auburn, I feel like when you look at some of the other teams in the rankings, Auburn could be a little bit higher. I mean, I think Auburn's a better team than Iowa State for sure. I think Auburn's a better team than USC. I don't think you could put Auburn over UConn because of that head-to-head matchup, but Auburn has played like a complete team over these past four or five games, and I think they're getting better every single time I see them step out onto the court. So while Auburn is the lowest-ranked team out of the three teams that we just mentioned, and I don't think, I think there are a few SEC teams that are ranked higher than them. Look, I think this team is going to be able to compete. I think they're going to rise as the season moves on. And props to Alabama for getting a win over Gonzaga, as we discussed earlier in the show.
I think Auburn's front court, comparing them to Purdue, just taking this in a different direction, Purdue may have the best front court in all of basketball.
Yeah.
And you want to put Auburn in the same situation because of the talent that they have with Jabari Smith and Walker Kessler. From an NBA talent perspective, Auburn's front court, That is elevated above Purdue. But from a college basketball standpoint, and the production in which they're going to give you, Purdue has a better traditional front court than what Auburn has. But they also play the game vastly different. Auburn's better at stretching the floor with their guys in the front court than Purdue is. Purdue's got a bunch of seven-footers that are going to camp down in the lane and are going to create issues for you. Auburn's got one of those guys in Walker Kessler, and I still think his skill set, he may not be shooting the three very well, which, keeping up with that tracker, he missed a three in the game against Yale, even though it was wide open. Like, and he didn't miss by much, but he did miss. Keeping up with that, like, although Walker Kessler may not be a great three-point shooter, I still think he has such great perimeter ball skills that it makes sense to bring him out to the arc to be able to help the flow of traffic towards the basket by unclogging the lane. I love him when he steps out on the perimeter because of his ability to pass the ball, his ability to drive with the basketball. I like him down low, too. Don't get me wrong. I like him in position to get offensive rebounds, but I'm not upset with the fact that Auburn can unclog the lane by bringing him out to the three-point line to open things up for the guards to be able to attack. That's an area where I think Auburn's been extremely successful this year. Auburn's front court is a little bit more versatile, I think, is what I would say in comparison to Purdue. But Purdue is producing at a much higher traditional rate in the front court than pretty much anybody in college basketball. Those guys are nasty.
Yeah, they're averaging 90 points a game, and then Zach Edey and Trevion Williams, their two centers, are just absolutely ridiculous.
They still have centers. I mean, that's
when you have a 7 foot four guy on the floor. I mean, that's going to be difficult to guard. You know,
man. And Walker Kessler and Jabari Smith are phenomenal. They're right there in that elite class of front courts in college basketball. I love their versatility compared to teams like Purdue. But, man, Purdue, like you said, they ain't playing around.
No.
We're going to continue to talk college basketball on the other side of this break. It was a block party in Auburn Arena on Saturday as the Tigers thumped Yale 86-64. We'll tell you our takeaways of that ball game when we come back. You're listening to On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central Alabama. Number to call, 334-321-1390. We had Spectre in our previous segment. Appreciate you calling in, my man. If anybody else wants to call in, 334-321-1390. Like I said, coming into this segment, it was a block party in Auburn Arena on Saturday as the Tigers thumped Yale 86-64. Lance, takeaways from the game.
Well, I will say, I think the first thing you have to look at is the fact that it was a block party. Like you just mentioned, 14 blocks for the Tigers on Saturday.
None of those were in like the first 5 minutes.
Yeah, and I will say, this was to be expected because in our breakdown, we discussed the fact that Yale is undersized and they would probably have a difficult time getting the ball inside. A question that you asked, Noah, is, well, if they can't get the ball inside, would they elect to shoot threes?
And they did.
And they did shoot threes. They were 9 of 25 for 36% from three, so that's not half bad. But they did elect to go inside just a little bit, and it was pretty difficult for Yale to find anything. If it was not off of like a backdoor cut or something like that, I think there were two or three times where there was either a miscommunication or Auburn fell asleep on defense where they were putting pressure up high and Yale found a cut to the basket, and so they were able to find some points in the paint that way. But overall, they were not making contested layups against Auburn much at all. Even if Auburn was not getting a block, they were controlling the paint.
Another game where Auburn won the turnover battle 12-7. Or won a turnover battle. They won this one 12-7. Now, don't read too much into that, saying, well, Auburn didn't force a lot of turnovers or anything like that. This Yale team is very good at protecting the basketball. That's what they hang their hats on. What you should be looking at here is the assist-to-turnover ratio for Yale. It was 11-12. They had a negative assist-to-turnover ratio. That is not something that Yale will do often, at least when they get to conference play and they're playing teams on their own stature. Yale will not be doing that. Yale's the type of team that will rack up assists 17, 18 a game and then only turn the ball over like Auburn's been doing this year, only turn the ball over like 11 times. Well, they held the turnovers at where they're at, but Auburn really made a mess of things inside the passing lanes. It really, really hindered what Yale was trying to do on offense.
Absolutely. And then also talking about those turnovers, Auburn created 12 of them. They had 15 points off of turnovers, and then they had 19 fast break points. Auburn got out and ran and transitioned really well in this game, and then in the half court after they got turnovers, they were operating really, really well. Katie Johnson went off in this game. That's something I noticed, as he went, while I believe he was 3 of 11 against UCF, he had a really solid day shooting the ball against Yale. So Auburn, whenever they created turnovers, they were creating offense, and I really love to see that.
Katie Johnson was effective, to say the least, but also he was in peak trash talk mode.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you saw the video of him kind of pointing or waving at a Yale player directly in front of him, guarding on a three, and then splashed the three in his face. 14 blocks to one between Auburn and Yale on the stat line. Auburn's assist to turnover ratio was 17-7. This Auburn team continues to impress me with their ball movement. 17 of their 33 buckets had assist tagged to him. This is not your traditional Auburn team in the past that has been kind of ISO hero ball. This team has learned to pass.
And that's something I really, really like to see. Is that's something that I've not liked about the Bruce Pearl system, is the way to defeat it is to put pressure on the guards and to try and slow down half-court possessions and then make them play hero ball in isolated situations. And I just don't think that's very efficient unless you have guards like Bryce Brown and Jared Harper, in which case you can do that because they can knock down those contested shots. Now that Auburn is running somewhat of an offense, they're trying to get different guys open, and they're sharing the basketball. I think it's really great to see. Wendell Green, I think more often than not, is looking to distribute than to score, and I think that's an issue that we had with guys like Javon McCormick. They were scorers. Like, they legitimately, Javon knew how to score the basketball, and he was more geared towards that as a point guard. I feel like with guys like Wendell Green Jr., he knows whenever to pick and choose his spot, scoring the basketball, but he specifically, along with Zepp Jasper, they are not looking to create on their own. They're looking to give it to somebody else, knowing that they are fully capable of scoring, but it's better off if eyes are on them and they're getting the basketball off. Both Green and Jasper combined 11 of those 17 assists.
Yeah, this has been their most impressive passing performance to date, I think, by getting their teammates involved. They, like you said, didn't put as much of an emphasis on them scoring. They put more of an emphasis on their teammates scoring, and that's a huge step in the right direction for this Auburn backcourt that I believe at times in the half court has had a hard time running the offense. Now, granted, this is weak competition. Yale's a decent Ivy League school. They really are, but I don't think that this is one of the better teams in Auburn's non-conference yet, at least trying to compete with Auburn from a talent perspective.
No turnovers between the two, by the way.
Wow. Yeah, this was their best from that perspective. And then, of course, we didn't see a whole lot of Walker Kessler. He only got 8 minutes.
Yeah, I think he had somewhat of an injury, and I think they took him out and they were taking a look at his knee. I think Bruce Pearl said there was some tenderness in his knee, so they were going to let him rest and make sure that there was nothing wrong. But you said 8 minutes, 4 blocks in those 8 minutes. He could have had a triple double.
Exactly.
If he didn't get hurt.
That's what I was saying. Jabari Smith continues to play great. 17 points, 7 rebounds, 2 assists, 6 for 14 from the field, 2 for 5 from 3. I think Devin Cambridge has been giving some consistent minutes at this point. I think things have leveled out for Cambridge a little bit. You break down his totals, he had a double-double. He had 10 and 10.
Yeah, and I really like what I saw from him defensively. I think his only block was that three-pointer that was in the corner that he just absolutely erased. I think I'm liking what I'm seeing out of him on defense, and the shot's going to come along at some point, I hope, this season, but defensively he's locked in.
Dylan Cardwell had a great game, 10 and 6 off the bench. He had 2 assists and some of those fill-in minutes there for Walker Kessler. He was 5 for 6 from the floor. Dylan Cardwell was the beneficiary of a few lobs in this game.
Yeah, plus 18 plus minus in this game. 10 points was his career high, and like you said, he was the benefactor of a lot of lobs in this game. Didn't Smith have a lob that he threw in this game to Cardwell? I believe he did.
Cardwell got like two lobs in this one.
Yeah, it was impressive.
He had some nice blocks as well.
Three of them.
We're going to take a quick break here. Bama Dog, stay on the line with us. We wanted to give you a lot of time to talk, so stay with us here. We'll be back on the other side of this break.
Stay on the line. More of the show when we come back.
Back on the line, Noah Gardner and Lance Dahl with you on ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central Alabama. Number to call, 334-321-1390. Bama Dog, we appreciate you waiting patiently. What's going on, my man?
No problem, guys. No problem.
What's on your mind?
Y'all came up a little bit short on your predictions on Bama and Georgia, didn't you?
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
Look, man, like I've been trying to tell everybody, these guys got a chip on their shoulder now. That's probably the worst thing that could happen, to just flat out doubt them like they did, especially with the major media. Nobody gave them a chance. Nobody except for Stephen A. Smith.
Let me ask you this, Bama Dog. I don't disagree with you, because I said earlier in the show that Alabama fixing their offensive line issues, that's want to. That's those guys showing up and saying, that's not scheme. That's those guys just doing it, right? My question to you is, emotion fades, right? Like, at some point, like, it was this their championship? Like, was this what Alabama was playing for? And I know the obvious answer is no, Alabama's about winning national championships. But from an emotional standpoint, like, that stuff can fade, and talent still does, and the issues that they've had still could reoccur. My question is, do you think it will?
No, it's not going to fade. Just like what Will Anderson said in his interview, he said, we're not a Division III school. We're not a Division II school. We're Alabama. It's as simple as that. We're Alabama. You know, people, they got short memory, man. Still Alabama. Still defending national champions. You got a Heisman-winning quarterback. You got a dang wide receiver that's fast as all get out. You know what I'm saying? And them guys have played a lot of football. They've played a lot of championship football. And that's in their DNA.
And this definitely is a playoff with three teams that don't have championship DNA. Georgia gets to this level and always fades. Michigan hasn't been on this level in a long time, and Cincinnati's never been here before, right? So that's something that's working in Alabama's favor, is that none of these players, none of these coaches really have seen a stage like this aside from Kirby Smart and Nick Saban, and Kirby Smart fades when he gets to this point. So I think it's definitely an easier playoff by most standards, and Alabama's more talented than you know, all of these teams. So I don't disagree with you. I still think that we have seen Alabama reach this stage before with teams that were more talented than what they've got right now, and they got blown out in national championship games. The thing is, they're not going to play a team as good as that Clemson team that blew them out. They're not going to play a team as good as that Ohio State team that beat them in a semifinal. This is an easier playoff than what we've been used to seeing.
Absolutely. But I promise you, they were not going to take anything for granted. And so they got something to prove.
I don't disagree. I think they do have something to prove.
Now, let me pivot to Bama's basketball team.
Go for it.
That wasn't too shabby what they did out there in Seattle, though.
And Bama pulled off an incredible upset. Like, and what's crazy is, a week before, we saw him lose to Iona, and then you see how quickly and how rapidly things can change. I want to see Alabama be more consistent, because I don't think they played great during their Thanksgiving week tournament, but then they followed up by beating Gonzaga. I mean, that's a huge win, and I think Bama's every bit. That shows you how talented Alabama can be. That shows you how that they could win a national championship this year, because they beat a contender. They beat somebody that could win it. And I think that's how we should be looking at Alabama for the rest of the year, is that this team could. Go ahead.
What's going to be dangerous is if they can get JD to continue to be aggressive. He's looking to pass the ball a lot right now, guys. But when this guy, the Lane O's been telling him, go ahead on and shoot, be more aggressive, attack. He's hard to handle when he's in that mode.
And it's funny that he's the least aggressive guard of the group, and I kind of don't blame him for that because there's a lot of ball-dominant shooting guards out of that backcourt when you're talking about Quinterly and Shackelford and whatnot, and I think that'll come with time. Of course, we have seen – why am I forgetting his name? Who was the guard that went pro this past year from Alabama?
I don't remember. Primo.
Yes, Josh Primo wasn't too aggressive. But then look at Josh Primo in the NBA right now and all throughout the summer workouts and whatnot. People were shocked by his offensive ability and his ability to score and his ability to pass. And then all because he was a backup guard. I mean, he didn't really start a whole lot last year. And then he gets to flourish by himself. I kind of wonder if that's the same case with J.D. Davidson, but it is early.
Yeah, it is early. It is early. But the thing is, Bama's schedule is loaded. It's really loaded. So they're going to have to play their best ball over the next few weeks because they got some doozies coming up.
Yeah, Houston coming up. That's going to be a big one. Bama Dog, we appreciate the call, my man.
Appreciate it, guys.
That was Bama Dog on the line with us, 334-321-1390. Always enjoy talking to Bama Dog.
Yeah, I really appreciate his phone call. And I will say, just right away, my prediction was 35-21 Georgia. I'm willing to admit I was dead wrong, as were a lot of different people. But, yeah, it was very surprising what happened over the weekend, both in football and in basketball. Props to Alabama.
Yeah, most people were expecting them to go 0-for. And instead, they went 2-0. Yeah, I didn't feel comfortable with my pick just because he's right. We have seen Alabama do this before, and I was talking to my dad. I went to the Auburn basketball game with my dad on Saturday, so that was still before the SEC title game started. And he asked me who I picked, and I said I picked Georgia, but I could see a very low-scoring football game because I have some respect for Alabama's defense. Obviously, I have respect for Georgia's defense. I was wrong. Like, everything about that football game did not go how I thought it was going to go, but I told him on paper, I said, if you, like, took the coaches out of this, if you took Kirby Smart and Nick Saban away and you just, like, looked at how these two teams have played this year and just erase history, just take these two teams, take the names off of their jerseys, just look at how these two teams have performed this year in a vacuum, and it was really hard to find, on paper, a path to victory. There are a lot of people hoodwinked about this ballgame, bamboozled, right? Like, led astray, as Stephen A. Smith would say, you know? There are a lot of people led astray on this because of how these two teams have played all year long. I don't think it was anything about scheme or anything like that. I think Bama just showed up with want to. Like, you just don't fix offensive line issues like that with the way that they played, giving up 8 sacks against Auburn, and then all of a sudden you shut the door completely on the nation's best defense. You don't just do that with a massive change of scheme or something like that. You do it because you showed up and you wanted to.
I just don't know how they didn't have they gave up 8 sacks to Auburn, though. That's what really confused me. It was like, is all that truly about want to? Because Auburn does not have the guys that Georgia has.
So it is all about want to. Like, I think in that same way, we looked at an Auburn team for 11 games that couldn't get pass rush on a piece of paper that was playing offensive line, okay? And then you've got this Alabama game, and you watch how the players performed. That's want to. That's motivation. That's energy. And that's what made so many Auburn fans upset, is that, well, why wasn't that there all year long? I think something's unlocked when you play in a game like the Iron Bowl that allows you to find that extra gear. And likewise, championship games can do that for teams that make it there. Alabama may have played like that for 12 games, but you get to that championship game and you got to win it to make it to a college football playoff. You might be able to find that extra gear that you've been missing all year long.
And that's kind of what I'm agreeing with you here, is the fact that whenever their back is up against the wall, whenever Saban's back is up against the wall, he produces. I think we saw similar things with Gus Malzahn and Auburn, just not to that level of like, okay, I got to win an SEC championship game. Let me go do that real quick. We didn't see that in 2017 whenever Auburn made it. But still, really impressive what Alabama was able to do against Georgia. I just think that part of it, I will say, is I think Derek Mason did call a decent game against Alabama. I still believe so.
I think he did. But I also don't – I have a hard time believing that Georgia didn't. I think they got beat. I think a lot of it's execution on the players. Not saying that the Georgia players didn't want it, but I think they just got beat. They got out-muscled. I think sometimes football's that simple. And a lot of people, you and I get caught up in this a lot, I think, sometimes too. So I'm not just talking to the masses. I get caught up in this sometimes. Sometimes I overcomplicate it when I look at football and I say, oh, well, this team does this really well, this team does this really poorly, bang, matchup discrepancy, this team should have the edge in this game. But in reality, sometimes going into a ball game, something that we may perceive as a weakness doesn't necessarily play out as a weakness in that given ball game for human purposes, for human reasons, because a lot of times it motivation and will and going out there and executing that day overcomes a lot of issues that you may have seen throughout a season that was a trend.
I will also say matchups are not completely dependent on the statistics coming into a game. Yeah. So whenever you're looking at matchups and you're saying like, oh, well, Bama's O-line does this statistically and Georgia's D-line does this statistically, therefore there should be, like you said, a discrepancy. You have to also take into account the way these guys play film, the technique, and then also, like you said, the desire. How badly do these guys want it? There's a reason these guys were 4 and 5 stars to begin with, okay? So if they want to perform, they have the coaching staff to tell them how to perform, they're going to do so regardless of the play call. If they are going to go out there, if they want to hit somebody, if they want to block, they're going to do so as hard as they possibly can. So I think when you look at matchups, you have to look at what happens on film and you have to ask the question, who wants it more? And I think like we were just saying, Alabama wanted it just a little bit more than Georgia in this game.
And so that's why, and I'm about to bring this to Auburn real quick, I am so refreshed with Brian Harsin being the head coach. Now, things did not end well this season, and a lot of people are upset about that. And Auburn's 6-6, and granted, I understand that. But and you probably should be upset. Auburn was 6-2 at one point. I totally get all the criticism that's heaped onto it. But the approach that this coaching staff has taken is a similar approach to old-school football coaches such as Nick Saban and Kirby Smart, who at the end of the day, they know that it's about want to. It's not necessarily always about scheme. It's about the Jimmys and Joes and getting those Jimmys and Joes to perform and execute. And constantly, like a broken record, Brian Hartson's talking about execution, about communication, about guys doing things the right way, about guys being disciplined and physical. At the end of the day, football comes back to that. Us as sports talk show hosts and other media personalities out there don't talk about that enough. At the end of the day, football is football, guys. And it's a bunch of really, really big human beings that can bench press 3 times my weight, go out there, put on a helmet and shoulder pads, and they go and beat up on each other for 60 minutes. And at the end of the day, the team that wants it more a lot of times, the team that executes better a lot of times, it's not always about schemes. Sometimes it's just about doing what you do better than what the other team does well.
Yeah, absolutely. In the words of Robin Williams, it's just one massive mountain of flesh running into another massive mountain of flesh and seeing who can get to a certain point on the grass faster. It's just that's the way it is sometimes. It's just lining up and hitting somebody else and how badly you wanted to be able to do that. And like we were saying, technique, I think, is part of it. And the fact that these guys that were so talented coming out of high school indicates that they have that technique and that ability to overcome things in certain situations, and Alabama's offensive line certainly answered the bell.
Let's head to a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to talk about our 5 best matchups of the bowl season. We'll try and get to as many of those as possible. You're listening to On the Line. Back on the Line, wrapping up the Monday edition of the show. Noah Garter and Lance Dahl with you. We're going to talk about the 5 best bowl matchups coming up here in the postseason. We may get to all 5. We're going to try to. Got about 8 minutes left in the Monday edition of the show, and then it'll be the drive with Bill Cameron. I got 5 for you right here. So we're going to go through my list. Tomorrow, let's go through your list, Lance, because I know you're still putting together yours. So we'll go through my 5 rankings, and then we'll go through yours tomorrow as well.
I have my list, and I'm not going to talk about it. I'm just interested to see what you have. So we'll talk about mine tomorrow.
All right, 5. Tropical Smoothie Cafe Frisco Bowl. UTSA, 12-1. Against an 11-2, 24th-ranked San Diego State team, December 21st, 6:30 p.m. on ESPN. This is the most enticing early bowl season matchup that we've got. Good luck with picking this game. I don't think either team really finished the regular season well, or at least playing their best football, considering San Diego State got blown out in the Mountain West Championship game. But it's a clash of styles. Both teams really like to run the football, but one team is a lot more spread you out. Offensive spread, you know, a spread shotgun offensive look from UTSA. On the other side, it's about the defense with San Diego State lining up. It's old school football.
Yeah, UTSA actually knows how to operate an offense. And like we make the jokes about Georgia living back still in the 1980s, San Diego State plays football like it's still 1980. A lot of defense, a lot of run of the football.
But the reality of this game is both teams have at least 11 wins.
Yeah.
These are two very good group of five teams that were in the top 25 for a decent amount of this year. So I think that this is going to be an enticing game. Four, I will get to a New Year's Six bowl game here. Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl, number 12, Pittsburgh against number 10, Michigan State, December 30th at 6 p.m. on ESPN. This is a matchup nightmare for both defenses. Pittsburgh throws the ball a ton. Michigan State has one of the worst secondaries in college football. Pittsburgh's defense is a little soft. Kenneth Walker should be running through a paper mache wall. Now, I think this is going to lead to a lot of points being scored. This is going to be a fun one.
The only reason I don't have this one on my list,
the brands,
is because I think that the secondary for Michigan State is so bad. I don't know if they're going to be this, in my opinion, could potentially be a blowout. Also, I think Pitt is actually good at stopping the run statistically. I may have to pull it up, but I don't think that they're giving up a ton in terms of total or rushing yards per game. That is.
Also, not a lot of teams in their division run the ball a whole lot, too, though. So sure. I think part of that is who they played this year. We'll move to third on my list. Rose Bowl game presented by Capital One Venture X. Number 11, Utah against number 6, Ohio State. January 1st, 4 p.m. on ESPN. I love this game because I don't think Ohio State wants to be there. And Utah's playing their best football and does want to be there. Look, it's the Rose Bowl. This is the most beautiful field in all of bowl season. You can't beat it. That grass is so green. I got to know what they do, man. I mean, they probably spray paint it, but probably. It looks awesome. Utah's playing their best football of the season. Ohio State just got manhandled by Michigan. Utah's a well-coached, physical, balanced team. Michigan, you know, they're not as good as Michigan, of course, but they are playing a high level of football where if they had not stumbled so many times in the first 2 months of the year, you're looking at this team as a playoff team. If they had not lost so early in the year to some teams like BYU and whatnot, this sounds like the type of thing, they're balanced, they're physical, that could give Ohio State issues if they don't play a clean game. And I'm not expecting Ohio State to play a clean game, considering I'm not sure if they're motivated to be playing in this.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if OSU is really motivated to be playing this. And that's actually something I was laughing about is yesterday. Yeah, it was yesterday. Whenever ESPN brought on Ryan Day, before they brought him on, they went to commercial break and they're like, "Yeah, the Rose Bowl is no consolation prize." And you just see Ryan Day before they have him on, just looking there on Zoom, just like all depressed and sad. He looks like he doesn't want to be there, and it's just like
how do you get up from losing to Michigan like that?
Yeah, it's like it doesn't look like he wants to be there, and I certainly don't think that his players want to be there. Give me Utah by 40 because I want to see that
win. It definitely smells like an upset to me, like one that shouldn't be, because on one side, right, of the ball you've got a team that's 9-3 that has a bunch of 3-stars, and on the other side of the ball you've got a team that's got all the best talent in the country. And they're 10-2, and all they've done is underachieve this year. The other team's overachieving. I like this underdog story.
The reason that I like this game is because I simply do think that Utah has a legitimate shot to win this one.
Number 2 on my list, Valero Alamo Bowl. Number 14, Oregon against number 16, Oklahoma. Now, this game loses a little bit of interest considering Mark Cristobal just left. But December 29th at 8:15 p.m. on ESPN. This is a game that has produced some incredible matchups between high-flying offenses in the Big 12 and the Pac-12. It's not the same way here. These are two teams that have quarterbacks that have struggled to throw the football on a consistent basis, but they're still two good football teams. They are two teams that have won at least 10 games. They're both ranked. They're both great brands. Bob Stoops is on the sideline again. I don't know who's going to be on the sideline for Oregon, but the storylines and the brands entice me here. This is one of the most fun matchups that I think we're going to get all bowl season.
It's the Alamo Bowl, typically, at least from what I understand, is actually typically a really fun matchup. It's fun to see Pac-12, Big 12 throw down. I would love to see something like we saw when Oregon and TCU played just a few years ago with that 31-3 or 31-0 comeback that TCU had. I'd love to see just an offensive showcase between these two teams. I just don't know if Anthony Brown has it in the tank against Oklahoma.
In my top bowl matchup, the college football playoff semifinal at the Capital One Orange Bowl. Also another beautiful field when they've got it all painted up before those guys take the field for a football game. Also, how do they get the field that green? I don't know how they do it. I love it. Number 3, Georgia against number 2, Michigan. That's New Year's Eve at 6:30 p.m. on ESPN. Look, Georgia's 7.5-point favorites. I think Michigan's got the dudes to run with them for 4 quarters from a defensive standpoint. I think this could be the type of defensive performance that you see out of Michigan where you make Stetson Bennett have to throw the football. This is going to be a tug of war, a wrestling match. Which team gives ground first? Because that will be the team to lose. They're both going to try and run the ball a million times. The difference here is I think Cade McNamara is a better quarterback than Stetson Bennett. than Stetson Bennett, so he can't even get his name right. I think he's a better quarterback than Stetson Bennett, and that could prove to be the difference in this football game.
I completely agree with you. I think Cade McNamara is a better quarterback than Bennett, but I will say, you know, the defense in this game could produce a lot of really cool moments. I would not be surprised to see both of these quarterbacks turn the ball over more than once. I'm not saying both of them have two picks, but I would not be surprised if, like, we have a combined, like, three interceptions between them.
Also, Aiden Hutchinson is a wrecker.
Yep.
This guy's draft stock, obviously he's in contention for the number one overall pick. He's playing a really good offensive line. I know they got, you know, manhandled this past game by Alabama, but there's still some really good players on that Georgia offensive line. This is a game that can make Aiden Hutchinson a lot of money if he shows out.
Yep, absolutely. That's going to be a matchup to see for sure. And I'm just wondering how Stetson Bennett operates in this game. Do we see a little bit of that mobility? Can he even escape this Michigan defense if he wants to? It could be a rough day for him.
Definitely. Is that who you – I don't want you to tell me who's at the top, but is at least that semifinal on your list?
Oh, it's in there. Oh,
there
it's
we
in
go.
There.
He says, oh, it's in there.
It's in there.
Is Alabama-Cincinnati on it?
Yes.
Really?
Yes, it is.
I left that one off because I'm not so sure that's going to end up being a good football game.
It's lower on my list, I'll say that.
Yeah. That's it for another edition of On the Line. We'll be back with you tomorrow. The Drive with Bill Cameron coming up from 4 to 6 p.m. Stay tuned. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. You know where to find us.